Welcome to the Plant Cunning Podcast,
where we explore our relationship to plants, other people, and the mysteries of nature.
Coming to you from the High Allegheny Plateau in central New York,
we are your hosts, A.C. Staubel
and Isaac Hill.
Today on the Plant Cunning Podcast, we have Nick Kavanaugh of the Railyard Apothecary. Hi, Nick. How are you today?
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. Thanks.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great to have you. So we have a traditional first question at the Plant Cunning Podcast.
Yeah. So what brought you to the plant path?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah. So yeah, well, there's sort of a long version and a short version. So maybe I'll do a medium version, which is that, yeah, I just, after college and after doing AmeriCorps, I just decided I wanted to basically learn more about like working with the land, and did some farming internships. And one of those internships was at Try and Life Community Farm out in Oregon in Portland. And I had learned a little bit about herbs just from friends and a local teacher in Syracuse where I'm from. But with that internship at an urban farm, I really got some hands-on experience with medicinal herbs in a way I really hadn't before, and was just so intrigued by that experience, I decided to learn more. And so I did like the internship at Herb Farm with a PH in Southern Oregon. And that was more immersive and had the farming aspects as well as the herbs. And then just wanted to continue learning more. Did Seven Song School in Ithaca after that. And then, you know, I realized that it sort of like combined my interest with like helping people on an individual level with my interests in the environment and connecting people with the environment and helping the environment. And so just decided to take the plunge and did the Vermont Center for Integrative Herbalism's 3-year clinical training program, and led me to where I am today.
Awesome. Yeah. So kind of got into it through farming and working, you know, hands-on that way with the herbs.
That's yeah. Really cool. Yeah.
Awesome. And I also am a student of Seven Songs, and I remember looking at the program for Seven Songs and looking at the Vermont Center for Integrative Herbalism and a few other herb schools that were like on the top of my list, but those were the top two for sure. And could you just speak a little bit about like what your experience with the Northeast School of Botanical Medicine in Ithaca with Seven Songs was like, and then what was the big differences between the Vermont school?
Yeah, so Seven Song School in Ithaca was really great, and it was especially great for learning the plants in their wild environment. So, you know, his training involves lots of time outdoors, wildcrafting, plant identification, going on these trips to different parts of the country and learning about the flora there. And I just really, really appreciate that I got that sort of immersive experience with wildcrafting and with getting to know plants in their natural habitats and gaining some botany skills. And then also Seven Song is just really well known for his skills with first aid. And, you know, as part of the program, I got to do first aid at the Rainbow Gathering. Mm-hmm. And that's this annual gathering that happens in the woods, various places around the US, and being able to practice herbal first aid there was just a really cool opportunity to get some hands-on experience with herbs and herbal medicine, and in a way you see sort of like immediate results. And so the program in Vermont, Vermont Center for Integrative Herbalism, I did their 3-year clinical training program. They do have a program that's a little more hands-on in the garden. I didn't do that program, but the clinical track is much more sort of like academic in a way, in terms of lots of lectures and classroom learning, and is a little more sciencey, I would say, and more focused on the clinical experience. So yeah, that was just a very different kind of program than what I did with Seven Song, although we had clinical aspects of Seven Song School as well. It was just much more developed in the Vermont school. Also, there was botany in the Vermont school, but not as much as with Seven Songs. So the different emphases just sort of like yeah, allowed me to just learn about herbalism in slightly different ways.
Really cool. Yeah, it's awesome to hear about that. That's kind of what I was gathering from, you know, reading about the Vermont School and then, yeah, experiencing Seven Songs. It is very like hands-on versus like more, the Vermont School seemed more academic, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so cool. And so then after you went to the Vermont School, did you just sort of stay in Vermont and started working at Railyard? Is that the progression there?
Yeah, so I graduated in 2016, and just due to serendipity, in my last like 6 months at VCIH, Railyard Apothecary was starting to come together through this really interesting opportunity with a herb company, Herba Moonshine, that had this sort of vision to start this project, but needed people to sort of make it happen. And so I was one of several people that got basically recruited to help start the project while I was in herb school. So I was able to sort of transition like pretty seamlessly, and quite fortunately to be able to do that work like while I was still in school and then immediately after graduating.
Nice. So yeah. What is Railyard Apothecary?
Yeah, so Railyard Apothecary is a worker-owned cooperative, and we have three main areas of the business. One is a retail herb store, another is a clinic, and the third is a classroom and educational space. So yeah, our primary sort of like aspect is the apothecary, the retail sales, and we do a lot to connect local suppliers, local growers to the community through the retail storefront, but then we do have the clinical services and the educational services as well.
Cool. Yeah, that's really cool. You're able to just transition like during, you know, you had a job ready to go in the field that you were studying mm-hmm. immediately. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So you see a lot of clients there and you sell herbs. What are some of the herbs that you utilize the most at Railyard Apothecary?
Oh, well, there's a bunch. Some of the big ones are nettle, skullcap, tulsi, lavender, chamomile, rose, oat straw.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, and where do you get those? You don't wild harvest, you don't grow or harvest all of those yourself, right?
Yeah. So our business doesn't do any growing or harvesting. Okay. But we work with local suppliers. So we get basically as much as we can from farms in Vermont or New York. And what we cannot get locally, we get from the big herb companies like Mountain Rose and Star West.
Cool.
And then what about you personally? Do you have some herbal allies that you keep coming back to either, you know, throughout your life, or maybe some stars of the show right now for you? Like, who are your plant friends that you could share with us?
Yeah, well, I usually keep my bottle of skullcap tincture at my desk. At least for recently, I've just try to keep that with me while I'm on my computer at work. Uh-huh. And I just find it really helps me get through the workday. You know, it's so interesting because, you know, it's sort of a relaxing herb, but I actually like sort of paradoxically, I feel like it helps me like actually feel a little more like alert and energized a lot of the time, just because it like takes the edge off of like that like overactive thinking and helps me focus a little more.
Yeah.
So that's nice. A big one for me. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I can really relate to that. A lot of people do find skullcap to be more relaxing and sedative. And in a tea form, I do find that a tea, like a cup or two of skullcap as a major portion of a tea will make me want to nap or just like go to bed. But the tincture does not do that for me at all. And I keep it in like my car in my herbal road dog formula with like a little skullcap and tulsi in particular, is that like relaxes my neck to help those like driving muscles. And so I imagine at your desk, you know, like you get a little tight bottleneck at your neck and then you're like take a little skull cap and it releases things and you're like, oh, I can think better now, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, yeah. Like it helps with that vata, excess air happening.
Yeah.
You're thinking too much.
Yeah, and if you've gotten too many different directions, it helps you kind of focus, mm-hmm. which is energizing because you're not like dissipating your mental energy in too many ways. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Great. Love talking about plants. Yeah, so definitely. Yeah, so I want to talk more about Braille Yard Apothecary too. So you've recently celebrated your 5-year anniversary as a business, as a collective, right?
We did. That was, let's see, actually, it was, so it'll actually be 7 years this June.
7 years? Oh, okay. Because wow. Sweet. That's awesome. Yeah. We saw something on your website about like.
Yeah, we still have the 5-year stuff on our website. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's even better. 7 years. But it was really cool for us to see each of those 5 years, like a little summary of the pictures and like the people in the space. It's a beautiful space that you have. Seems like it's like a really welcoming environment for learning about herbs and connecting with plants and with people.
Thank you. Yeah. It's pretty unique. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how is Rail Yard Apothecary structured from a, like a business standpoint?
Yeah. So we're a worker owned cooperative. So we're a C Corp corporation incorporated as a C Corp. And that means that being a worker-owned cooperative, the owners are the people that work at the business.
Mm.
So, you know, in a traditional corporation, the owners and the workers are, you know, not necessarily the same thing. But mm-hmm. in our case, like everybody who works here is on track to becoming a worker owner. So we have 4 worker owners currently, mm-hmm. plus 3 employees. And once somebody has been working here for a year, then they can basically apply to become a worker owner. And that means that like we who are the worker owners all share in the profits of the business. So mm-hmm. there's no distribution of profits based upon percent ownership, like in a traditional business. It's distribution of profits based solely on the number of hours you've worked.
So, oh, cool.
Yeah. So if somebody works 50% of all of the total labor hours of the year, mm-hmm. then at the end of the year, they would get 50% of the profits.
Cool. Yeah, that was actually one of my questions, like with the 4, you know, worker owners, like how do you, you know, divvy up the profits at the end of the year? And is it just like an equal thing? But no, it's based on like how much work you're actually putting in. So it kind of does that make it feel more equal because everybody is like kind of getting what they're, you know, putting into the business?
Yeah, definitely. It makes it feel like, you know, we're all working towards the same goal
mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, you're sort of like rewarded based upon the effort that you put in.
Yeah.
So it's interesting though, because the worker owner model favors like the people working in the present. But, you know, the people who worked in the past, like, aren't seeing, like, the benefits that have, like, come in the time beyond where they were working. So it's interesting, like, just thinking about, like, you know, starting a business. Some people might feel like they can start a business and it's, like, an investment and they don't have to work and they will reap the benefits if it's successful. You know, they can, you know, just sort of step away from it in the future. Mm. It's sort of the opposite with a worker-owned cooperative. So mm-hmm. For those of us who are here right now and who maybe plan to be here in the future, like it feels like very like fair and equal because we know that like the profit that we will earn is going to be like directly proportional to the amount of effort we're putting in the present.
Right. But then if a situation happens where you're starting one of these cooperatives and there certain people put in a lot of effort at the beginning, getting the business running and going and popular, and then they leave right before it gets popular and actually more successful, and then they don't reap any of that investment of time and labor into the future. Right.
Exactly. So, yeah.
So that could be a downside, but it definitely seems like there are a lot of upsides too. So how did you come across this model? Like how did this begin? Yeah.
So I wasn't actually around when like the original worker owner cooperative model was created, because so Red Iron Apothecary actually originally was just the herb store and the classes and not the clinic. And the clinic actually was incorporated as its own business a few months before the apothecary was. And my understanding was that the people that were involved in the clinic at that time were just a collaborative group. They wanted to collaborate together. Nobody, I guess, wanted to, you know, start their own business. And so it just made sense for the sort of collaborative nature that was being developed at that time. Mm. Interestingly, the apothecary actually started out as a nonprofit because we thought that, I don't know, it just made sense as a way to be able to be very community focused and community oriented. Yeah. Later found out that we couldn't actually become tax exempt being a retail establishment. And so that's when we then merged with the clinic into one big work owner cooperative in 2020. And it made sense to us at that time because, you know, there was this group of us all working together and the same idea is probably they were thinking initially with the clinic is that it just made sense given like the cooperative and collaborative nature of our work and the way that we work together to have that reflected in the business structure.
Yeah, cool. I find this very interesting and necessary too, because there, you know, we've got problems with all sorts of, you know, our economic systems, whether, you know, you're more, whether the capitalists own the means of production or the state does, it's not a good, necessarily good for people working, but we've got to try new things, and not even saying that this is a new idea because it has been around for a while and there are very successful worker cooperatives. But it's really good to see it happening because there are definitely some tensions. There can be tensions with it too, and obstacles. What kind of obstacles have you run into, or have you run into obstacles over the course of this business?
Yeah, we've seen some obstacles for sure. So I think probably the biggest obstacle is that there are like challenges that come with cooperative and collaborative decision making. Mm-hmm. And for a while at the beginning, it was pretty messy because we were figuring it out and we didn't have like a clear structure. And so, you know, people wouldn't know whose role it was to make XYZ decision. People would, you know, just get confused about, you know, what sort of autonomy they had to make decisions. And yeah, since that time, like we have become like a lot more structured and organized. Mm-hmm. And I think it does actually work quite well. So, but yeah, there's definitely been some bumps along the road in terms of just people having trouble with sort of interpersonal dynamics that have come up.
Yeah, that's definitely, to my mind, that seems like one of the biggest obstacles to overcome, mm-hmm. because that's one of the benefits of like a hierarchical organization is there's a clear like line of executive decision making. Mm-hmm. And it can happen quickly and you make decisions and, you know. And then I've also been part of like, you know, like Occupy or something, making a decision cooperatively that just never happens because it takes 4 hours and you still haven't come to a decision about anything. So how did you become more structured? Yeah, well, like how did you navigate that?
What does that structure look like?
Yeah, so we were trained by this organization called Round Sky Solutions. And they specialize in sort of workplace democracy and creating collaborative workplaces. And so they have a very structured system that has like sort of step-by-step instructions for how to run a meeting, how to make decisions, how to use consensus. They have sort of a modified version of consensus called integrative consent, which is like, yeah, it's a little different from a lot of other consensus systems that are out there. And what I really like about like this system is that it sort of like has like efficiency sort of built in, and it's sort of, and it's so highly structured that it like deals with like ambiguity by like making it just more clear what to do. Like just as for one example, like you were saying, like the 4-hour meeting, I have been involved with organizations as well that have had very long, you know, drawn out meetings. And we definitely have had some of our share of those sort of meetings here at Rail Yard as well. But just for example, like there's like a process for making a proposal in which like you make a proposal, there is like just like one set of questions and answers. So like we just go around one time, everybody gets a chance to make a question or make a comment, ask a question or make a comment one time. And then the person who made the proposal has like the ability to either modify their original proposal or not. And then there's a round of objections, and the objections can't just be because somebody doesn't like the proposal. They have to be like objections on the grounds of it like being something that could like majorly harm the business.
Mm-hmm.
And so it sort of favors quick decision making, mm-hmm. with the idea that because decisions can be made quickly, they can always be remade in the future.
Nice.
So yeah, rather than like getting hung up on making the perfect decision, it favors just sort of movement forward and revisiting things in the future if need be.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like that. It like keeps it in the flow, keeps it moving forward. And then you're not like completely stuck, because some organizations, it's like, oh, you have to modify the charter to like address that situation that didn't work. So that seems like a really good method. And I'm curious if you have any other thoughts on like building effective team dynamics, like how do you cultivate accountability on the day-to-day with your team? And how do you, just cultivate easy communication so that when things do come up, it's like resolved easily and quickly, any team dynamic tips?
Yeah, with accountability, something that's also sort of built into RoundSky is a process during each meeting in which you report back on your like to-dos. So every meeting, we make a list of all the action steps that each person is supposed to take. And then we revisit those at the beginning of each future meeting to just briefly check in and say, oh yeah, I did that thing, or I did not do that thing.
Love that.
Yeah, and the list is like a perennial list. So mm-hmm. If you didn't do it from one meeting ago, it'll still be there 2 or 3 meetings from now if you still haven't done it. So it's like,
yeah,
it's sort of a nice way to like keep some accountability in that sense, and just like building in a way to keep checking in. We also have regular, basically like staff evaluations that everybody is involved with that worked with that particular person. And so there are sort of like some sort of manager-like roles,
mm-hmm.
but even those people in those sorts of roles are like evaluated by the people that they work with.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's another way to keep accountable, is to have like a regular process where people can like give and get feedback.
Mm.
And then there's also like processes that we have for resolving interpersonal tensions.
Nice.
And yeah, and we haven't actually utilized those probably as much as we could, but we have a bit. And just like everything else with like the system we've adopted, it's like very like structured and like clearly defined in terms of the process, so that helps keep it in a more sort of like healthy container, that it's not like an open-ended discussion for people to just go back and forth about like the feelings that are being triggered, but mm-hmm. it's sort of structured in a way that like the focus is just on sort of like one issue at a time. And it's just set up for somebody to listen to concerns that other people have and not to respond to them. So it's sort of like avoids like just a loop of going back and forth, and like just instead encourages just like the receiving of the feedback and letting that sink in, and then being able to return and give feedback in the other direction in a future meeting in a different time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's so smart.
Yeah. Because yeah, it's in the moment where you get the emotional reaction to the feedback, and then you say something that you maybe not even mean.
Yeah.
You know, and then it just starts this back and forth of those emotions. So some time and space to like, you know, gain clarity and come back to center and then listen, you know, that definitely seems like a very helpful way to manage those sorts of circumstances.
I'm just like thinking about all the times that I've received feedback and have had this like knee-jerk inflammatory, even sometimes internal, and I don't even express it, but like response of just like cringe. And then it settles in after a few minutes where I'm like, oh, they're right. Yep. We're dealing with like trauma here and everyone's doing their best. And I'm really glad I didn't say what I did, or I'm really sorry I said what I did, you know? So I love that idea of like, you're here to listen and observe the feedback and like, just process it on your own time. And then we'll get back to this next time. And that also creates the container of like throughout the space of time, a few weeks or whatever. I don't know what it is. If you do like weekly meetings and then like other monthly meetings, or.
Actually, yeah, there's meetings for each like.
Scope. It's like separate, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So basically there's meetings like every month or every 2 weeks, depending upon the scope. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So like you have that space of time to kind of observe things with each other and then think about how to present it to that person in a compassionate way, rather than like, you did this again, you know, and like the inflammatory response that can happen when you're working with people day in and day out. But it sounds like you're really like creating this environment where people are feeling safe to share. And it's kind of cool that you haven't had to utilize the like structure for dealing with like conflict as much, you know?
Well, I don't know. I think maybe boys, we probably could have utilized it more.
Okay. It's fine. Well, it's there for you, right?
Yeah.
So is the reason that it wasn't used more, like, because it seems like it would take a long time to resolve a problem also, you know? So like, is it a matter of like getting that whole process started? It's like, I don't want to go through the headache of that. Or is it just, yeah, it wasn't the tensions weren't difficult enough to take it to that level. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's just that like, we didn't even like really learn how to do this process until maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay.
And so it's that it has been unfamiliar to us, and it's still not super familiar to us. So I think we probably could have or would have used it more if we just knew how to do it in the past. And yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, and it's kind of cool that you've been doing this for 7 years now. So you've had the time to work through some of the kinks too, because I know, I mean, a lot of collectives, you know, fizzle out within the first year or two, just because of, but you know, interpersonal,
a lot of businesses too,
like a lot of businesses too. Yeah. So it's, yeah, it's, I assume you continually are learning new things, and, but at a certain point you also kind of have it down.
Yeah. What are some of the benefits that you see from a cooperative versus like a corporation?
Oh, well, just having more people involved and sort of like able to sort of follow their passion and interests. We've just been able to do so much more than we could have done, you know, as individuals, certainly. And, you know, probably even if we were just organized in a different way, because, yeah, people just have like a pathway to sort of like bringing their interest and their passion to fruition, because mm-hmm. it is a collaborative structure and a cooperative structure. And so, yeah, we just have like a lot of pretty different aspects of the business. Like the clinic is very different from the education, is very different from the retail space. But even within the retail, you know, we've got, you know, the local farms that are supplying the bulk herbs, but then people have developed relationships with local product makers, and we've got a whole herbal justice aspect of what we do, where we sort of fundraise to create a fund to make our products and services accessible to BIPOC individuals and to people who cannot afford herbs. That's a whole sort of project. Awesome. We're a dispensary, so we sort of will like blend custom tinctures and tea blends and powder blends for other practitioners or for clients of our own clinic. And so there's just so many, and within each of these things, there's like, you know, little projects within each of those. So I think just that, like, having this collaborative structure is just so much more than like, you know, a traditional like individual or sole proprietor or partnership, you know, could probably like do like on their own.
Absolutely.
Just connects us, I think, with more people in the community, because everybody that's involved has their own personal networks.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
And different personalities themselves. So it's like different people are attracted to different practitioners, or folks working in the herb store can like get through to different people in different ways. Yeah, it's way different than just a sole proprietorship and like one person. You're way more limited in that sense. Yeah. And it probably is like keeps it. I imagine that collective businesses really keep the individual collective members motivated, because it's not just your business where you can kind of slack off and it's just affecting you. But when you're in a collective and other people are depending on you to do your job, and you see that to-do list in the recurring meeting notes, and you're like, it means so much more to like actually do the work, because you're supporting these other people in your collective vision.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool.
So how do you make sure that the things that nobody wants to do get done?
Oh.
Ooh, yeah. Like taxes.
Yeah. Well, the bookkeeping is my job. So the good thing is that, like, I don't see, that's the thing, because like, yeah, no, I don't really like love doing like bookkeeping and like tax related stuff.
Yeah.
But I kind of do. Like
there's a gratification about it.
Yeah. I find a certain gratification and like just like the mathematical aspect of it. I like math. I like that it's just like very like clear, and you know, you have a result like immediately. Totally. Do the thing. And so I think this is sort of like how it is with everything. Like there's things that some people like really don't want to do, but like I think fortunately there's some people that do. Like,
that's true.
Yeah, like I'm not as excited about like pressing tinctures or like making products, but there's somebody that's really excited about that. And so yeah
that's awesome.
And cleaning the bathrooms? No.
What's that?
What about cleaning the bathrooms?
Oh.
That's actually, that's a good example, because number one, like anybody who's staffing the retail counter, which is all of us, we all take turns doing that, has to clean the bathroom during their shift. And so it's we just rotate it through. So it's not one person having to do it all the time. And we also do contract out for a cleaner. And that's like, you know, two things that we contract out for. One is like the deep cleaning of the whole space every week. Yeah. And the other is some marketing help. So.
Oh, cool.
Nice. Yeah. That's a good way to, you know, everyone's got to do it.
Yeah.
When they.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So do you want to share a little bit more about like your classes and the educational component? Because we haven't really talked too much. We've brushed on the herb shop and the apothecary, but what kind of classes are you offering and what does that look like? How often and stuff like that?
Yeah, so we've got an eclectic sort of variety of classes. Some are sort of like basic herbalism classes. A lot of the people that we serve are new to herbal medicine. And so we have, you know, a fair amount of intro level herbalism classes. And then we also have special topics, which are a little more advanced. We have stuff that's tangentially related to herbalism. So for example, just coming up, yeah. So the next event that we have coming up is a sleep clinic, actually. So it's sort of a hybrid class and clinic event where there's like a sleep presentation and then also one-on-one consultations. And so that's a good example of something that's sort of like the like intro level, you know, how do I help myself with herbs sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Next month, I think it is, we're doing a class on herbal abortion. So mm-hmm. that's with Ember Peters and some other folks who wrote this article for the American Herbalist Guild Journal, their most recent issue, which is just basically, I think, about how to think about herbal abortions
mm-hmm.
in a clinical way. So that's mm-hmm. like a much more specific advanced topic that's like especially geared towards people who are working with herbs in a clinical way. So those are sort of like two like opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of like the kinds of classes that we mm-hmm. that we offer. And then yeah, there's also the classes that are like, for example, we're having a class coming up soon on Beltane plant lore of the Ooh. Celtic Isles, I think is the full cool. name. So it's more in the realm of like earth-based spirituality mm-hmm. and has some plant aspects to it, but more of like a spiritual thing.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And do you do it like once a month or so, or is it kind of just a sporadic schedule?
So it's kind of sporadic. So yeah, there's most of the year, there's going to be something happening at least once a week, mm-hmm. but we'll have periods of the year where there's just nothing happening for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool.
So right now there's at least one event happening through, I think, the end of June. So one event per week.
Nice.
And then what about the clinical aspect? Can you tell us a little bit about that? Like how many clinicians do you have and who are you serving? And yeah, what?
And so that's cooperative too. So like if somebody comes to the same clinician every week, it still comes to go, is part of a collective payment. Like, yeah, how does that part work?
So it's all part of the cooperative. So. Okay. We currently have two people seeing clients. I am one of those people, and there's one other person. And then we have a third person who is working in more of like a research role and is supervising our sort of like clinical roundtable, not supervising, but leading our clinical roundtable. So basically we have like at least once a week, a roundtable to talk about cases.
Awesome.
The three of us, and sometimes we'll include other practitioners as well. Like we have other practitioners who are like renting offices in our space, like a naturopath or nutritionist, cool. acupuncturist. And so sometimes they'll participate in those conversations as well.
Awesome.
So if a client wants more input mm-hmm. on the case from the whole team, we can offer that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not exactly that we're like sharing clients, like your client can just see whoever mm-hmm. is available, but it's that we have support from the whole team available if a client is interested in that. And then the payment structure and everything is all part of the cooperative. So yeah, the clinician is just another employee basically.
Cool.
And or worker owner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems really helpful too, to be able to do the round table. And, you know, everyone is being paid for that. Everyone's, you know, input is valued too. And a lot of times it's very helpful to have second opinions or third opinions and bounce back ideas with other people. And it's probably helpful also to learn for like the more junior members to like learn how to do clinical work better.
Yeah.
It reminds me a little bit of the Ithaca Free Clinic where Seven Song, you know, is a practitioner of herbal medicine there, but they also have like acupuncturists and doctor MDs and naturopaths and Reiki practitioners, massage therapists. And they have like some longstanding clients that have come for years and are dealing with chronic issues. And once a month they have a round table to talk about just those longstanding clients who have seen pretty much everyone there in the room. And you hear these like details that you didn't get from your intake with the person when they were in a different mind state with like the, you know, so it really helps to like work together on that person because everyone has input on their healing journey, you know?
That's really cool. Yeah. It's a really cool model.
Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah. We should have Seven Song back on and talk about the Ithaca Free Clinic more because it is another cool collective model. And I think people are really interested in how to start these collective businesses and work together collaboratively. Sometimes words are hard for me but
too.
Yeah, but to work together on these herbal businesses or mutual aid efforts. And, you know, people run up time and again with, you know, conflicts and, you know, hearing how you and Relia Apothecary have overcome some of those, I think is just super helpful and can be applied to so many different business structures, not just collectives, but people are working with each other all the time on projects. So yeah, thank you for going into detail on all of that collective stuff with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any other questions that people often have about your model that we didn't ask?
I'm not sure. Maybe I would just add that, yeah, that there is like a structure and that there are roles that are like clearly defined. So like, we don't have like a traditional like general manager that you might find in like a retail store, but we do have like an apothecary lead who is sort of like in charge of the apothecary to a certain extent. So there is like, just to say that there is still like some level of like hierarchy sort of, in that some people do have roles that have more decision-making power than other people, but that like the nature of the like structure is also horizontal in other ways, and that, you know, everybody is part of a scope, and it's like means basically like a team, like a scope is sort of like a team and has the ability to influence the whole. So I think that's maybe not necessarily a question, but maybe a common thing that people don't know is that it's just like there is a structure to it. It's not just like, you know, everybody's all like exactly the same in terms of their roles.
I think that's really helpful.
I mean, it probably wouldn't last that long if it was that way, you know. Sharing the way that these are structured, I think, is really helpful. And like having a manager or somebody in lead makes sense, but then having them also get feedback from the people that they are managing is necessary, because I've had managers working in the restaurant business or wherever, where, you know, they just have a good power trip, you know, but at the same time, you kind of need some direction and somebody who, in that role. So
it's a
good way to do it. But yeah, again, I think this is really helpful. And this kind of structure can be used for a lot of different businesses, whether it's an herb collective or like a permaculture, like a landscaping collective or a
homesteading project,
nursery business. You know, there are so many ways to do it. Yeah.
Go villages of like collective living together. Like there's more and more of that popping up too.
Yeah. And that's cool. Those another thing that often fails because the structures aren't thought out, you know. Yeah. Well, I guess there's one other question is like, yeah, so how do you fire somebody? What if you have to fire somebody?
Oh. We fortunately have not had to do that.
Nice. So good hiring procedures.
I guess so.
Yeah.
But there is a process. It's in the bylaws. So that's an example of something that's like outlined in the bylaws because it's such a sort of fundamental question to exist as a business.
Yeah.
And so it's basically that it's just basically says that the board of directors, which is all of the worker owners, has the power to use our decision-making process, which is integrative consent as described by Roundsky, to remove another board member if needed. So it would just be like a proposal, like any other proposal.
I basically. See.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, this has definitely been very interesting. You know, there are a lot of worker cooperatives and some successful ones, but like not that many. And you know, it's great to be able to talk to somebody who has been a part of this and practicing this for a number of years now. Yeah.
And I'll just offer too that it's worth sticking with it because the financial rewards are not a lot in the beginning.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially with starting a worker owner cooperative that you can't like just get a share of profits if you put in money. You need to actually work. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's not necessarily financially rewarding right away.
But right.
Like having a long-term vision and being able to like see that long-term vision and just stick with it is, I think, what does make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And do you have any other tips for people who are thinking about starting a workers cooperative?
Yeah. Well, just know like the find out the information, like, there are specific things that are really helpful to know. And the United States Federation of Worker Cooperatives is probably one of the best resources nationally. In Vermont, where we have a really great organization called Vermont Employee Ownership Center, which is just fantastic. But I mean, we made mistakes in how we structured our business. We structured it as an S corp. It should have been a C corp. We didn't really have good accounting advice from the beginning. There are like accountants that are knowledgeable about worker cooperatives. Wagner CPA is an accounting firm that knows this stuff really well. For the bookkeeping side of thing, there's an organization called A Bookkeeping Cooperative, ABC, that knows that end of things. So yeah, just like really finding out what is the correct legal structure, how to set up the books and the accounting from the beginning is really important because we wasted a lot of time just like not understanding that. And I'll just say too that it, like the other good thing about this model is you really can do a lot without necessarily a lot of resources. Like we were lucky that we had sort of this initial investment that didn't come from any of the people that were involved in doing the work. But you know, I can imagine we could have done the same thing if, like, you know, there was close to a dozen of us at the beginning. If each of us had put in $500 or $1,000 or a couple thousand dollars, you know, we probably could have accomplished, you know, close to the same thing without having that outside support at the beginning. So just the ability to pool resources, if people don't have, you know, a ton of access to capital to start a business, it just makes it quite possible. And it's really something that like makes it so people can do so much more together than like anyone could necessarily individually.
Yeah, that's a good point that, you know, even if you have several people that have a little bit of upfront money to put towards it, you can also pay them back even at interest if you want, as the collective grows, you know, you'll get that initial investment back and you're building in your future. So a really good point that pooling your resources can, you know, make for actually a really productive business together, where one person's resources maybe wouldn't have gone as far. So
yeah, totally.
And having all of your accounting ducks in a row and your structural things and having your like vision and all of that written out, you know, and your operating agreement, or I don't know what you call it, but like your kind of manual, having that all, I'm sure really helps when it comes to like the things that can come up in the future that can cause a little conflict, or when people want to leave or move, you know, what all of that being spelled out is probably really important to have from the get-go when you're working with people in a collective.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if people want to find out more about Rally Art Apothecary, and if they're in Vermont and they want to come see you as their herbalist, how do they reach you?
Yeah, so our website is rallyartapothecary.com, and all the information is available there. We're also on Instagram and on Facebook. We're located in Burlington, right near downtown on Battery Street in the actual rail yard. Hard to find with Google. It doesn't always map people correctly because of the fact that we're not really on a real road. So we have a video on our website for how to find it and on our directions page. And yeah.
That's how all the cool places are. A little hard to find, but worth it.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of your knowledge. And it was really cool to hear about your experiences with Railyard and your history. So thank you so much, Nick, for taking the time to chat with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. And yeah, just this was a lot of fun. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.